2020 was one of the hottest years ever, and it brought to an end
the warmest decade ever recorded. More than 15,000 scientists are sounding an alarm about climate change. They call it a warning.
Says the effect of global warming is so severe, the region is actually shifting to a different climate.
They've also found they had underestimated the rate of change.
Experts say that we have until 2030 to avoid catastrophe.
2020 was the hottest year on record.
Changes are not made, and made soon, there will be irreversible damage to the planet.
Hello and welcome to My Green Podcast, the show about accessible, sustainable living. I'm Jarvis Smith.
I'm Katie Hill.
And I'm Joe Wood.
This is the show where we look at how to live a sustainable, ethical life without drastically altering your lifestyle or blowing up your bank account. Everything from quality green products and where to get them to easy changes you can make now to make the world a healthier place.
Later in the show, we'll be joined by Bevis Watts, CEO of Triodos, a leading sustainable bank. But first, let's have a look at some of the recent environmental news.
An entire town burnt down in Canada. The Gulf of Mexico is on fire, and today, the day we're recording this, Northern Ireland set a record for the highest temperature since records began, at 31.2 centigrade. Now, we're seeing firsthand how the climate crisis is creating extreme weather. We're all feeling it. It's been super hot. Joe, Katie, what have you got to say on this weather changes?
Gosh, you know, I know I might be a bit controversial here, but hasn't the weather always changed throughout time? You know, we had frozen Thames, we used to grow vines in central London, there's streets named after it. Is this just a natural process? I'm not sure, I don't know. Does the world do this, change weather?
I think you're right. I think there are natural patterns, but the thing about what's happening at the moment is that it's man-made carbon that's entering the atmosphere at rates never really seen before. So it's not kind of, it's not natural cycles. It's entirely man-made. Whether that still counts as natural, I don't know. That's up for debate as well. Man's natural.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing as well, isn't it, is that, you know, this, we got this kind of road to net zero that, you know, COP26 is talking about. And essentially the Paris Agreement is really based on trying to keep temperatures below rising at 1.5 centigrade. Now, we're already risen at 1.2. What happens when we get to 1.5, which is an increase on the normal cycle of temperature, is that it completely changes the weather patterns. So we get more storms, more droughts, you know, the hotter countries get much hotter, the colder countries get much colder. And that's actually the big issue, because the systems that we've set up, the kind of man-made systems, if you like, the societies that we live in, are just not geared up to handle this type of weather changes, the floods, fires, that whole thing. So that's the big issue, Joe. But absolutely, I think on a grand scale, like over thousands or hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years, yeah, absolutely. Temperatures change radically.
Yeah, there's an unpredictability in what's happening at the moment because it's uncharted territory, isn't it? We don't actually know what the feedback loops are going to do. So there's a lot of talk about how, you know, the ice, the white of the ice reflects sun back into the atmosphere. So if the ice isn't there, not only will it mean higher sea levels, but it will also cause kind of extra levels of heating that we don't maybe think about. So there are loads and loads of these loops and these kind of these patterns that we're not actually entirely sure what they're going to do. Yeah, we don't know how things are going to end up. It might not be that the hot countries get hotter and the cold countries get colder. There's so many other variables at play here. It's going to be really difficult to predict what happens, and we'll see so many climate refugees and so many people who need to find safe places to live. All these island territories as well, all these island states that, you know, they're some of the forerunners of renewable energy, and they're going to find themselves completely wiped out just for no fault of their own. It's so heartbreaking.
You know, when you think we're cutting down the rainforest and getting rid of all those billions of trees, and we're polluting our seas, this doesn't help towards climate change. We should be cleaning up and growing more trees. The more trees we have on this planet, the healthier it will be, and the cleaner our oceans will be. They will produce more oxygen. So what we're doing is we're panicking, but we should be planting and cleaning instead.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. And I think it's a really simple message for people that, you know, that do shop, because obviously we're called consumers, you know, it's like this kind of economic branding thing. But what perhaps we need to become is restorers. I know I keep going on about this, but, you know, the UN have asked for this decade of restoration. We're asking for an age of restoration. What that simply means is buy more consciously, buy less toxic products. And when you do buy something which essentially comes from the earth, give back at the same time. So buy from, you know, organizations like My Green Pod that plant trees and, you know, and others. But I think one of the big issues is, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, is that I think that the powers that be, whether that be the UN or world leaders, they're trying to fix the problems with the same thinking that caused it, right? And my feeling is that actually we need a completely different regime of leadership. It needs to be a much more feminine leadership, more women. You know, there's examples of something like She Changes Climate, where they're calling for a 50-50 balance of women and men at the major decision-making table at COP26. And I think because historically men make decisions based on economics, you know, as a rule, that's actually going to continue to get us in the mess. What we need to do is completely transform the systems that we're living in so that we don't need to buy so much and we can live more symbiotically, co-creatively, collaboratively with nature.
Yeah, the vast, vast, vast majority of climate refugees are women, and it's just, it's criminal that more women don't have a seat at the table in these kind of discussions.
Yeah, really it is. I'd really like to shout out shechangesclimate.org and, you know, get supporting that. And obviously we've got copxx.org, which you talked about in our last episode. So, okay, brilliant.
Okay, so Hydrogen Olympics. Well, with the delayed Olympics that are finally taking place this summer, but with no spectators. How weird is that going to be? Aside from the game itself, of course, the Olympics are set to highlight what is being called the Hydrogen Olympics. Katie, you wrote about this recently, didn't you?
I did. I think it's a really interesting story, because it's hydrogen, something that's been kind of bubbling under the surface for a very long time. It's had a few false dawns, really, but I think something as mainstream as the Olympics is really going to bring it to sort of mainstream consciousness again. So with the Olympics this year, what's happened is that the Olympic cauldron, which is what marks the end of the torch relay, is for the first time in all of Olympic history, it's going to be powered by hydrogen. And Japan is actually a forerunner for a hydrogen-based society. It was one of the first countries to adopt a national hydrogen strategy in 2017. And it's really, really giving hydrogen a starring role at the Olympics. The whole Olympic village has been built as a miniature kind of hydrogen city.
Cool.
And most people don't understand, do they, that hydrogen is actually a completely infinite resource, because you can make it. Whereas obviously, you know, even electric batteries, for example, do come from Earth's resources, which are finite. So this is going to have to be the future. The problem is the infrastructure is not quite there. So
yeah, I think there are a few things actually to kind of, I mean, it's abundant. It's going to be crucial. It's naturally abundant. It's light. It's storable. It's transportable. It causes no emissions at all when it's produced with renewable energy. But that's what's key, because at the moment, a tiny amount of hydrogen is being produced with renewables. It's all being produced with fossil fuels, so it's kind of it's all a bit kind of it's not necessarily the wonderful solution that we think it might be.
How can people get behind supporting a hydrogen movement, Katie? What could people do?
It's not so much about getting behind supporting. I think everybody agrees on all levels that hydrogen has to play some sort of role in our transition to net zero, but the question is around what that role is and what kind of what sectors it's going to be the most dominant in, and where it really fits in. Because if you think that less than 0.7% of the current hydrogen production is from low carbon supplies, that's a lot of fossil fuels that we're using to actually create the hydrogen in the first place.
Yeah, so refrigeration systems, which has a huge impact, and obviously transport and travel and things like that, you know, they're really big, kind of, I guess, simple wins when we move to a hydrogen economy.
We've got so much work to do on this planet. It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the massive, massive, massive issue is that, you know, we've been so caught up in fossil fuel driven economy. You know, even our monetary system is all based on that kind of you know, that oil industry. And that's what's got to change. And we are beginning to see movements in that, big investment firms, you know, divesting from fossil fuel industries and deforestation, but it's just not happening quickly enough. We have nearly, you know, less than 9 years to turn this thing around, if that, because a lot of scientists are saying it's actually happening much more quickly than the statistics are showing. So, yeah, I mean, we're seeing that just this year, aren't we? Just in England with the weather changes that we talked about in our earlier section. So we know we've all got to step up and get behind being part of a solution and definitely not contributing to the problem.
Yeah, be part of the solution and not the problem. I always say that.
Now it's time for our regular feature. Let's talk about six, baby. Six easy steps anyone can make to lead a more sustainable life.
So today we're going to talk about step three, how we power our homes.
Look, the easiest quick win is for, you know, anybody can do this that's listening, is to switch to a 100% renewable energy tariff. And you know, we talk about Octopus because they're the fastest growing 100% renewable energy company. But there's Bulb, there's even Eon now. I mean, the thing to do is obviously pull away from those companies that are not 100% renewable. That's the most important thing.
Well, I used to have renewable energy when I lived in London, but now I am off the grid.
Oh, Joe, you're just, honestly, we are so jealous about your off-grid living. And so that means you are completely powered by what? Solar, wind?
Completely powered by solar. Yeah. But, you know, I do have to have a backup generator for when it's, you know, there's not much sunshine. But right now, it's my generator doesn't work at all because we've got so much sun. And I've also got my own water. So
amazing.
I like that.
Have you got a storage battery then? Do you have a storage battery that you've got
24 storage batteries actually.
24. Wow. Gosh, that castle must be huge that you're living in.
No, it's a little farmhouse.
I know.
Has it affected the way that you live, Joe? Has it changed anything about your day-to-day kind of how you use energy and how and when you use it?
Yes, without a doubt. So I try not to use the dishwasher and washing machine, you know, just all the time. You know, I know that I need to do my washing and dishwasher at a certain time of day.
I've got visions of you now with those washboards like you see, you know, in the Ganges in India. Yeah. With you scrubbing
sitting on the side of the pond, washing my clothes.
Scrubbing them.
So and I try not to use a lot of energy because it goes down quite quickly if everything is on. And I always, you know, if somebody's here, I say, please turn off the lights, you know, use less, because you don't realize until you are producing your own energy how much it is to run a house. If everybody's over here and the lights are all on, my batteries go down and I have to do a forced charge on them. So, I mean, it's amazing how willy-nilly I used to live with lights on all the time in my house and never even given it a second thought.
Well, you just take it for granted, don't we? I mean, that's the point. This whole movement is about us becoming more aware, more conscious, more in response. And that, again, being a solution and not a problem. And you know, a lot of people at home, they might not have, you know, smart batteries or solar power, but what they can have is a device telling them, you know, how much energy they're using. Like, if I used to have great fun with ours, you flick on the kettle, the washing machine, the, you know, the this, the that, and the other, and you just suddenly see the you know, the voltage of energy usage go up, and it's really
the cost.
Really, the cost.
I mean, it absolutely amazes me how much energy we produce for our entire country. You know, it's just outrageous what we must produce.
So there's simple things, isn't there? When it's cold, you can stick a jumper on, you know, maybe look at a cheaper an energy tariff that's more tied into, you know, cheaper tariffs at night, things like that, which, you know, brands like Octopus Energy do provide amazing energy tariffs that are way more competitive than the big six. And actually, most people will save roughly about £250 to £300 a year if they switch to 100% renewable energy tariff. So that's definitely a win.
And just to be more conscious as well about what you're using and when. And like you said, Joe, turn the lights off. If you're not in the room, turn the lights off. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It, you know, just save the energy.
Otherwise, how are we going to run our electric cars as well as our homes?
Yeah, that's another big issue. We're going to have to come onto that on another episode, because the EV industry is moving so quickly, but the infrastructure isn't moving as quickly.
Yeah.
I heard a thing on the radio today, actually, that rural communities, they're just not considering putting charging points out in the country. And therefore, that means that rural communities are going to be completely left behind when it comes to this, you know, this shift to EVs, which has to happen by 2030.
Gosh.
And it's the rural communities that are so much more dependent on cars, because they're often not served by local bus services either, and networks and trains and things. So,
yeah. And then what about the farmers? You know, now I live in the country. What about the farmers and their tractors and their machines that they need to plow the land and grow our food?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. So we'll come on to that in another episode for sure.
Coming up next, Joe and Jarvis talk to today's special guest, Bevis Watts, CEO of Triodos Bank.
Our guest today is CEO of Triodos Bank, the sustainable bank that is a pioneer in using finance to invest in projects that are good for people and planet. Welcome to My Green Podcast, Bevis Watts.
Hello, Jarvis. Hi, nice to be with you.
Hi, Bevis. How are you?
Hi, Joe. Good to meet you. All well, thank you.
Are you any relation to Charlie Watts?
Sadly, no. But I have no claims to fame or royalty at all. So you got a very boring guest, I'm afraid.
Oh, I don't have that.
Well, you know, Charlie owes me some money, and as you've got a bank.
now I see why you wanted to be on this one, Joe. I got it now. You're trying to get a debt repaid.
Yes. Come on.
Oh, all brilliant. Right. Well, Bevis, let's start with Triodos, because, you know, a lot of people of the listeners might not necessarily know about it. So please explain how the bank operates and what makes you different to the high street banks that most people are familiar with.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been around for 40 years internationally and over 25 years in the UK now. And what we try to do is use money with conscious thought about how do we improve the quality of people's life today whilst not compromising the future quality of life or the natural environment for future generations. That's it in a nutshell. And I suppose what we try to do is we seek to be a reference point to show that banking can be different. It can be a force for good. You can use money in a way that benefits people and the planet, and we also have a different banking model. But if you're going to say you do that and put yourself on that pedestal, then you have to be transparent. So we publish every loan and investment that we make. So we allow the customers and others to scrutinise whether we get that mission of the bank right.
You use people's money to make a better planet. Like what?
So we invest across broadly three themes. So social, cultural and environmental. So you'll find us in financing charities and social enterprises, things like housing associations and all sorts of things you can imagine, food banks, but also on the environment. So we're world renowned for renewable energy, organic farming, fair trade. But also we finance a lot of cultural projects because we think, you know, this challenge of sustainability is as much an inward challenge, and how do we all connect within one another? How do we sort of release materiality? How do we have a more caring and sharing world? Then how we connect through the arts and through spirituality and so on is also an important part. So we also invest in cultural projects.
Oh, you're not the typical banker, are you? Using those words.
I never even knew there was a bank like this. Oh my God, what am I doing at my bank?
Yeah, well, the point is, Joe, you didn't know there was a bank that had the same outlook on life as you. I mean, that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it is amazing. And I think it's so important that you're not, you know, the bankers unfortunately have a pretty bad name for themselves, particularly after, you know, some of the ways that we've had to pick up the banks after the, you know, the disgusting behavior of some of them in the past. But the point of view is that if people do want to actually live a lifestyle that's sustainable, that includes all the pillars of society, right? And money's the one thing that actually makes certainly the human cycle of the world go round. And with you, people are, you know, they're confidently putting money into projects that are better, if not brilliant, for people and planet. Whereas, you know, current investment funds and institutions are still funding deforestation, fossil fuels, and these awful things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Oh my God, I think I love this bank.
Oh, there's a match made in heaven today. Maybe this is going to be a Valentine's Day special, I think.
We'll send you the link to apply, Joe, straight after this. Don't worry. So,
triodos.co.uk.
You haven't got much money left, though, Joe, have you? Because you've spent it all on planting trees in your garden.
Yeah, I'm looking for a grant to do some more.
Well, you know what? The government are funding lots of rewilding projects at the moment, so your land could become part of that. I live up at the Boughton Hall Estate, Bevis, just outside of Skipton. And we've actually got the biggest rewilding project in the UK happening right outside my windows on
lovely.
Your doorstep.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's an area we've been working on, actually. We're leading four national pilots called Nature-Based Investment. So really trying to wrestle with this problem about how can you finance rewilding or landscape scale restoration of nature by connecting it to economic outcomes? So we're leading four projects. One of them is a big natural flood management project where insurers, water companies, flood management agencies will all put money in over a 10-year period to sort of use nature to reduce flood risk. And off the back of that, we can raise money to do multi-million pound landscape scale restoration, planting trees, creating meanders in rivers again, all that sort of stuff. So it's a very cutting edge area we're fascinated by as well.
There you go, Joe. There's your streamline for the funding. You just need to speak to Bevis.
I'm going to watch out. I'm definitely going to. That is just, I think that's wonderful. That's what I've always wanted in a bank, to have the same kind of views as me. How long has it been going and when did it start?
So the bank originally started in the Netherlands in 1980, but we're now in Spain, Germany, Belgium, and the UK, and internationally through an investment management business. So if you put your savings or have your current account with Triodos in the UK, then we will lend that out to projects here. But if you invest in a stocks and shares ISA, we have an international business that will invest in best-in-class sort of multinational companies or pioneers in different sectors. So so there's a whole range of ways you can use your money. As you were saying, I think what we're trying to encourage people to do is align their money with their values. You know, where you choose to spend, save and invest is a kind of vote for the world you want to see.
Yeah, a few years ago, I was at a bank, I won't mention the name, and they said, you should invest some money, Joe. And I said, yeah, I'll invest some money, but I don't want it invested in anything at all that will hurt the environment. And they turned around to me and said, well, we're not going to be able to find you anything. I said, you're kidding. Why wouldn't you be able to find me something that was going to help the planet, not do any damage? And they said, we don't have it. So that was about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things are changing. So, I mean, what banks have historically done is given people assurance over minimum standards, as Jarvis was saying earlier, but that doesn't really cut it. It's bare minimum sort of things you will exclude investing in, like arms or and so on. But it's not very progressive. But things are changing. And I think we're in a strange period where for the next 2 or 3 years, you'll see a lot of greenwash and banks claiming they're great for the environment and they're making big climate change commitments. But you'll see standards coming to the fore. So you'll be able to get in a few years' time, I'm sure, much more confidence in what you're investing in and the fact it is actually, you know, having an impact on biodiversity loss or on climate change. And
that's
so
good
on.
To know. It's good to know, because I think the whole movement around ecocide and, you know, these big corporations that are damaging the planet that should be held accountable for it. So it's lovely to hear that banking and just to be clear, you are a business bank, but you're also a customer bank as well. You know, there are personal accounts that people can have and business accounts, right?
Yeah, so the model is absolutely individuals choose to have their current accounts, savings, investments with us, and then we don't borrow from other banks. So that's the only way we're financed, which makes us independent and quite resilient in hard times. But then we will lend that out to projects in the UK if you choose to save with us here and so on. Yeah,
that's really lovely. Can I ask you, Bevis, because although you're currently the CEO and you've been senior there since, you know, 2016, but what other major achievements have you had, and what were you doing before you got into banking?
Some of the press dubbed me the first environmentalist to run a bank, because I've spent 20 odd years working in sustainability in different guises. So the early part of my career was spent in the recycling industry, and I'm quite proud of some of the things we did there. I was part of the early team at RAP, the Waste and Resources Action Programme. But trying to sort of bring multi-million pounds of investment into the UK recycling sector when it was still very embryonic. But I also ran one of the wildlife trusts in the UK, because conservation and nature, as Joe and I were talking about earlier, is a great passion. I've volunteered internationally on different international marine conservation projects. So I was chief executive of Avon Wildlife Trust for a while, and still tried to keep my fingers in and help out and volunteer on conservation projects where I can.
Lovely. I bet there aren't many major bank executives, C-suite execs, that can say that.
That said, there's a lot of good people who work in banking, and I think we kind of need to help them on this transition, you know, because the bank bashing has been justified in recent years, but it's not really moving the debate on. And ultimately, banking is man-made. This system we all now live in is something we created, so we have the power to change it. We just have to find the right people and the right advocates. But yeah.
Yeah, we love that, don't we, Joe? People power, because we're saying it's got to come from the grassroots up, and if it can come a little bit from the top down, we can meet in the middle, and then we, you know, we get to create a better world.
So do you live a sustainable life at home?
Yeah, well, I hope so. Crikey, pick an area of my life. I mean, I cycle just about everywhere I can, journeys-wise, but there's no shame in my fridge. You'll find everything organic and local, if not. And and I'm a big I live in what was a terraced house in Bristol, but it's got quite a big garden. It's a mistake to buy a flat for the garden, but that's what I did. But I grow loads of my own herbs, fruit, veg, big wildlife area. So if you've been working in this sector for 20 odd years, you have to walk the talk. So I believe in it. So, yeah.
We were talking to one of our other guests, you know, that there is no such thing as perfect, but there is when living a sustainable lifestyle, but there is as close to, and that is exactly what you're saying, growing your own, you know, getting renewable energy, you know, investing in the right way. And, you know, there are lots of great things that we can all do as small steps individually that have a huge impact if we all collectively take these steps. And that's what we've got to do, right? We're in a time of crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. And people often don't think of the obvious things, so they don't think about their bank. You know, we're just about now getting that if you change your electricity supplier, you might get renewable energy and so on. But we've got to think a lot more laterally. But also, we've got to help each other, because we shouldn't be snobbish on this journey. You know, I've learned loads over 20 odd years and have adjusted things. And I think, and still have loads to learn in different areas, you know, but I think the great work you do at My Green Pod, the sort of store you've got and everything else, the more we can make it easy for people and promote great things and share what we've all learned, the better.
Yeah, thank you.
That's what it's all about, education. It's educating people so that they know that there is another way to live besides what they're used to. I live off grid, actually.
Yes, you are.
I have my own water, my own solar panels, and
didn't you have your battery pack up on you once? And you were like, well, "Oh no, where are the candles?"
No, I had to spend a night in the dark with just the fire and candles. And but you know, it's not been easy, but it was a big learning curve. I thought it was going to be a lot easier, but now it's all falling into place. So I've got it all down.
You've always been a pioneer, Joe, and that's what I really love about you. That you've always, you know, you've always been at the front of the journey. And I mean, to go off grid, it's a huge thing to do, but actually it's a beautiful thing because you're totally in control of your own ecosystem, aren't you?
Yeah, it's great. The only thing I didn't have up till now is an organic bank.
And now you have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, some people do call us the organic bank because we've banked the Soil Association for many, many years, and a lot of the leading organic brands in the country and so on are customers of us. So we're often associated with that. But wouldn't it be great? I was just thinking, could I take a bank off grid? Because we've got solar panels and rainwater capture, but then I'm thinking the regulators might have an issue if the phone lines if the phone lines went down and people couldn't get their money. So
You'd have to bury the money and in the garden.
Yeah, definitely.
maybe there's a model in that you could put seeds into money, and you know, when it comes out of date, people just put it in the garden rather than sending it back. That'd be quite a nice model, wouldn't it? But joking aside, did you ever imagine yourself becoming a banker, like back in the day when you were environmentalist and sustainability? Did you ever think, oh, I'm going to become a banker?
Yeah, not at all, to be honest. And I suppose this journey on sustainability started for me. I was a student studying a business degree, and I was studying in Sweden for a year as part of that. And it was like living in the future. You know, you're living in an apartment with waste segregation for recycling and just very energy efficient. It was completely different. And that's what inspired me. And it was a very reflective time of my life because I lost my father then. He was a teacher. So I was very much thinking, well, you know, what's life all about? What impact do you have? So that's where the journey started. And I've kind of just followed my nose really on where do I think I can have impact. And in the days I worked in the recycling industry, I came across somebody in banking who I was trying to convince to invest in the recycling sector, who was very reluctant because of vested interests. They were lending to the traditional waste management companies who saw it as competition. And they said, at the end of the day, you know, the return on investment on a landfill site is better the faster you fill it. And that for me was a big light bulb moment, saying, well, here's me working at a grassroots level trying to affect change. I need to get to these guys. I need to get to the top of the tree and the money and try and really influence change in the financial system. So that's why I ended up where I am.
Wow. It's actually, I mean, it's interesting. My career started on a landfill dump. I was on that Channel 4 TV show where we literally had to live on a landfill for 3 weeks to highlight there is no such place as away. This is the damage you're doing to the earth. So it's quite interesting. Both of our stories started with trash and waste.
I think every school should take their pupils at least once in their life to a landfill site. Because when you smell the stench and you've retched on the landfill site, you would really become so much more conscious about
this. So true. I mean, we couldn't sleep for the first 3 nights. It was so smelly. I mean, it was that bad. We couldn't sleep. And then you get used to it.
Yeah, that is a good idea to take schools to a landfill like that. I mean, it would change their outlooks. I mean, that's the way to educate the kids, really.
Yeah, well, it's the dark side of consumerism, isn't it? It's the opposite end to any high street or shopping platform. And that's very much about the work that we do, Joe. It's inspiring people to just make those simple life changes. Yeah. But I wanted to just pick you back up on the organic banking thing, because I think that's an awesome model. And I think people could really relate to that. We've just partnered with the Soil Association, like you guys have done for years. And we're actually going to be their sole distribution platform for Soil Association, for selling Soil Association products, to really get that messaging out there. So that's a very exciting partnership for us. But in your daily life, thank you, Joe. Thank you.
Brilliant.
In your daily life, Bevis, what would you say are a couple of really important things that you do that anybody else could take on themselves? You know, recommendations, tips?
Oh, crikey. I mean, as I said earlier, I think just being really conscious about money being a vote for your values and the world you want to live in, and really explore every purchase and decision you make. But I mean, because we're talking about money, though, my number one tip would be to really think about your current account, savings, investments, what they're doing. And it might be you ask your current bank what they do with your money and you think, yeah, that's fine for me. I'm happy with that. Or you think about your pension and you look into what that's investing in if you've got one and you might be happy with it. But if not, I'd really go and encourage people to look at the Make My Money Matter campaign, which is looking at pensions and getting to make net zero climate commitments, but also look at switchit.money. And that will talk to you about how you can switch your bank if you're not happy. But really thinking about that conscious consumerism is my tip.
Lovely. Well, I think they're great tips and they're definitely ones that we'll publish so people can find them.
Well, I'm definitely going to check you out. I think it's very important for me to be with an organic bank. I really do. I mean, I live my life like that. So why isn't my banking like that?
Well, that's the point, is we all do lots of things, but we don't realise that if we do our recycling, we buy our renewable energy, you know, our pension funds and our savings could be eclipsing that in terms of the impact it's making on the planet.
Yeah.
So it's one of the, you know, the biggest impacts we can make. The Make My Money Matter campaign think it's 27 times more impactful to switch your bank and make a contribution to climate change than a lot of the other life choices we make.
Isn't that fascinating? Yeah. And it's something that hardly anybody knows.
Yeah, that's it. Wow. I mean, even I didn't know, and I thought I knew everything.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad because that's why we've got our guests that we have. You know, they're here to inspire us and for us to learn from, and you know, for people to get on board with very, very simple switches that they can make in their lives, because we know 90% of people in recent studies want to live more sustainably, only 10% of people have acted, and there's this 80% gap, which means people want to do it but haven't. Why? Because they don't really know what to do.
Yeah.
And that now's a really important moment, because whilst a lot of people have really suffered and struggled through the pandemic, an awful lot of people have saved money if they're in stable jobs and so on. So you've suddenly got, you know, 40% of 18 to 34 year olds have suddenly got significant savings for the first time. And, you know, if they all put them into savers or ISAs and so on, that's 2.6 million people. So this year of all years is a real year to say, OK, let's consciously use money and direct it in a different way.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm really glad you ended with numbers, because it would have been awful if you didn't. But thank you for that.
Especially for me.
I try to avoid numbers. There's difficult questions.
No, we needed numbers. It wouldn't have been fair if you hadn't given us some numbers. So, Bevis, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I know you've found a new customer in Joe. So that's...
Yes.
I'll just take my my cut for the introduction, if that's all right.
All right. <Just kidding.
laughs> I owe you a chai tea, Travis.
always open to a chai tea. Thank you ever so much for joining us, Bev. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Bevis. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you for having me.
And on the last note, put your money where your heart is, people. That's I guess, what we've all got to do. That's our show for this week. We hope you enjoyed and gained some really useful tips on living ethically. If you did, please subscribe to wherever you listen to podcasts and be sure to give us a 5-star rating so that others wanting a greener lifestyle can find us.
Thank you to our guest, Bevis Watts, no relation to Charlie. We'll put links to the Treedos website on the show notes. Follow us at Joe Wood Official and at My Green Pod.
For more tips and the latest ethical news, go to mygreenpod.com or email us at hello@mygreenpod.com.
My Green Podcast was presented by Jarvis Smith, Katie Hill and Joe Wood. It was produced by Mike Hansen for Pod People Productions, music by The Phoenix Rose.